You are listening to KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, and you are very welcome to Book Lovers Cafe. Book Lovers Cafe is a program of author interviews and book reviews from around the Sound and beyond, and I'm your host, Chris Wilson. Today, I'm very delighted to have Erica Bauermeister right here in the studio. So after the pandemic, we're back to seeing people in person, and it makes us all feel so good. Thank you for coming in, Erica.
Oh, it's lovely to be here.
Well, Erica's finally got a new book. She takes her time, but we anticipate them greatly. And this book is called No Two Persons. And I would like, first of all, to say to Erica, that is a very interesting title. And so did you choose it to kind of make the readers start to think, what is this going to mean? Where did this title come from?
Well, the title actually comes from a phrase, no two persons ever read the same book. And so the idea is that we all may read the same words, but every one of us will get a different story from the same book. And that's kind of the working premise of the book. We've got an author, her book, and then nine very disparate readers. And it's an unusual structure. I've written interconnected stories before, but it's going to require a little bit of work on the part of the reader. And so what we wanted to do was get the reader a little bit prepped so that they're not expecting a novel with it that follows one character for an arc that lasts 300 pages. And so if you have no two persons, then you open the book, you get to the epigram, which says no two persons ever read the same book, and you start to get your expectations set, because expectations are incredibly important for how we interact with a book. And so I wanted it from the very beginning to be clear.
Right. So this novel is really about a book and its effect on people, or how it influences people's lives as they read it. Would you say that that was true?
Yeah. And the fun is that it's a fictional book. So it isn't a book that, it's not Pride and Prejudice. It's actually a book that doesn't exist.
No. But it's in your head. I know, Erica.
It is.
So the book is called Theo. And, it's kind of a character in the book, but there's also these nine very riveting characters. I feel like this book is very character driven.
Yes.
And the first person that we meet is the writer. So maybe you could introduce the book by reading a little bit from the first chapter, the writer.
Sure. Happy to. And this is actually the very beginning of the book, so it gives you a good introduction. The writer. The story on Alice's computer had been finding its way into words for more than 5 years, or maybe forever. Over that time, it had grown, changed, creaked, flown, gone silent and then gained its voice again, its plot taking unexpected paths, its characters turning into people she hadn't thought they would be, just as she had. This glowing screen, the one constant. This story in all its iterations. Now awaiting the last step. Someone to say yes. She was young for a writer, barely 25, but in some ways Alice had always been old. Always been watching, learning, searching for the things that people were not saying. Truth lies below the table. She knew this even as a child. If given the choice, she would have taken her dinner plate down into the cool, dark space beneath the tablecloth, where she could watch her mother's fingers tighten along with the conversation, watch her older brother's shoes point toward the exit even as their father interrogated him about his latest swim meet. Medals he did or didn't get, effort he did or didn't expend. Children, of course, did not eat under the table, so for Alice, a tendency toward napkin dropping had to suffice. "Why can't she keep that thing in her lap?" her father would say to her mother. But you could learn so much more, keeping your gaze down. Just as well for Alice, who had never liked meeting people's eyes. It always felt like looking into a jam-packed closet or opening the door to your own. In any case, her father preferred children who were respectful. When Alice had learned how to read, she'd discovered her own world far from their house and their eastern Oregon town. After Alice brought back her choices from the library, she'd open their covers, smelling other children's meals and lives in the pages, and she would put her face in and blow, like a human smudging, to make the stories hers. The year Alice turned 9, an author came to visit her school. It was on that day Alice understood for the first time, in a way that was both slightly depressing and terribly exciting, that books were written by people. Real people. With mascara that flecked down onto the soft, pale curves of skin under the eyes, and a sweater that was a bit too long in the sleeves. This woman at the front of the class, this not-quite-finished-looking woman, had written the book she was holding in her hand. Before this point, Alice had never met an actual author, and so it had been possible to pretend that they were no more real, and thus as magical, as the characters inside. But here was this woman, telling the class that she wrote every day, during these hours, using this ordinary pen. That the characters were her friends. "I live in their world when I am writing," the author said to the class. Yes, Alice thought, the breath catching in her throat. And in that moment, she changed her allegiance from magic to magician.
Now, that truly is something to think about in terms of being a writer. And people have said about this book that reading moves us, can change us in endless, magical, and individual ways. And also, this is a glorious celebration of fiction, and it's very original in the way it's put together. Now, you as a writer, as I was reading this opening chapter, I was thinking, is this Erica's experience? Or an imagined experience of what it's like to start to think, I'm going to be a writer. I'm going to make up worlds.
I always agree with those authors that say all of our characters are us and none of our characters are us. I mean, I never base a character on someone I know, including myself. But there are always elements of myself in any character. There have to be. It's coming out of my brain, right? And so I do think that there are certainly moments in Alice's story that I identify with very strongly. Whether or not they came from me, I'm not sure. I mean, the part about trying to get published, that feels very true. The rejection part feels very true. And also, the way that the story comes to her is the way stories come to me. And I don't think that's true for every writer. Every writer is different. But for me, characters find me as much as if not more, than I find them. So that aspect is true as well.
Right. You mentioned that this book really has, kind of an original structure. And so how did it come to you? How did you go into it? Was it a character or was it the concept of the book? Where did you begin to think about the story?
So my books tend to come from sort of two different sides. Usually there's a question, sort of an intellectual question that I'm interested in. So for Scent Keeper, it was, what would it be like to grow up with smell as your default sense, right? And for this one, it was that whole concept of how differently we all see the same things. You know, I would go to book clubs and I would listen to them all interpret my books in completely different ways. And it was one of the few places that I saw people talking about differences of opinion with curiosity rather than animosity. And that became more and more true as we got past 2016. And this idea came to me in the winter of 2020. And the second part of how a book comes to me is often the structure. And in this case, it just sort of landed full cloth in my head. Just one book, one writer, a group. I didn't know how big the group would be, but I knew it would be fairly large. But a group of really disparate readers that would all find different things in the same book.
So you've written about different characters, in a group before. So that's something you're familiar with. So I'd like to talk about some of these characters. Did you plan them in a certain order? Was it important how they all fit together? Was it an arc in the book?
Yeah, I mean, it's really critical because one of the big differences is, take a book like School of Essential Ingredients, where there's a very firm center to that. You've got a cooking school, you've got a cooking teacher. Each chapter is a different class, a different character. But there's a lot of structure to hang your hooks on, right? And in this case, because what I wanted was the book to be about how we have these communal experiences, and yet we may not even know how we're connected. So there wasn't going to be that firm center. And I didn't pass the book down from one person to another or put them all in one book club. I wanted this to be diverse over both time and place. So there's a 10-year time span, as well as this, it moves all over the country in terms of where these characters are located. So that part was tricky. But on top of that, you have for every character, once you've found who they are, and to me, I let them come to me organically. I just find them places. I call it going fishing. They just show up. And then, so I have them, and I find they're fascinating. I go down the rabbit hole with them, figure out who they are. But then there's how do they find a book? How will that change them? And how are they connected to each other? And even then, once you've got all of that, you're trying to create a book with an arc. And so each story, you get a bit more of that book, Theo. Each story takes you a little farther into the plot. And so you have that. And then on top of that, you have this other layer, which is interconnected stories are also like music in that you have to make sure that there's variation in tone and speed and all those kinds of things to keep the reader engaged. Mm-hmm. So, for example, you can't put all the dark, sad books, you know, characters, mm-hmm. In the middle, right? Because people will just get sad and leave. So you have to make sure that there's a diversity of character types and experiences. And so all of those things, it's like this giant watch. You're putting together all the parts and making it all fit so it'll all work at the same time.
I have to say that as I started each section, I was totally engaged by the character and their story. And I didn't even really worry about where the book was going to fit in because mm-hmm. I was just immersed in their lives and what was happening to them. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that I took from this story, besides everything that you mentioned, was that so many of the crucial things that happen to us as human beings are talked about in this book. Mm-hmm. From being a child, the writer, and also another character, the brother of the writer, and then to being a young mother, did you draw on your own experience of what it was like to have a newborn and be trying to have a career at the same time?
Sure. I mean, I think mm-hmm. anytime you're a mom, you're going to use that experience. You have to, right? Mm-hmm. It's what makes being up at 2 a.m. okay. You're like, mm-hmm. yep, but I'll use this. So, mm-hmm. sure.
And then there's a number of characters also that once they're involved in their lives and they've decided where they're going or what their career is going to be, it's totally upended. And that also is really fascinating. Your setting for one of these characters is mostly underwater. Mm-hmm. And that connects to the book, but also is just complete unto itself. So how did that come to you? Why were you writing about diving? What's it called?
Free diving.
Free diving, that's what it's called. Right.
So it's when you dive without tanks or oxygen.
Right, and I didn't realize there were contests.
There are. They're death-defying contests. And one of my goals was to make each chapter this immersive world so that you completely go into that character's life. And it will be a little disruptive when you shift to the next. I mean, that's the point, is each person is an individual, and I wanted to make sure that you could identify them separately. You were never going to get these characters confused with each other. The free diver was particularly easy to make distinct because he goes underwater without oxygen. But it started, one of the ways I love to go fishing for characters is I will go in William James into the secondary room, the nonfiction room, where he's got all the books laid out with all their covers mm-hmm. up. And I will just look for something that sparks my interest. So I found My Stroke of Insight there, which turned into a chapter. Mm-hmm. And the diver came from this book called One Breath. And it's this beautiful cover. It's just a riveting cover. It's all these blues, and it's this diver head down, just this line, a sinuous line of a human being heading down. No tanks, no oxygen. And I just thought, who the hell would want to do that? Like, what kind of person does that? Like, what's your background? Who would you become? Do you need to be fixed? Do you not? What's going on? You know, and it was just like questions were just popping out of my head.
And the questions are in the reader's head too.
Absolutely.
Same thing.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I know people, there are people in Port Townsend that do this. And I become curious, I guess. And then the more I read about it, it's such a sensory experience. And I, you know, watching all these YouTubes and practicing putting my face in really cold water and holding my breath, and I'm terrible at it. But that's the fun part about being a fiction writer, is that I get to try things, even if it's just in my imagination. I can try things I would never do and be people I will never be.
You are listening to Book Lovers Cafe, and we're talking to Erica Bauermeister about her latest book, No Two Persons. She's also the author of The Scent Keeper and, more recently, House Lessons, which is nonfiction about a house right here in Port Townsend. So if you haven't read either of those two books, I highly recommend them. So we're in these settings. There's another setting that was really fascinating to me. And there's a young girl in a garden shed at a private school. How did you think of that, that she would end up in this garden shed multiple nights?
You know, she showed up right after everything with George Floyd, actually. Mm-hmm. And there was so much understanding that there were entire ways of seeing the world that people were not paying attention to. Lots of people, one way or the other. You know, there's always going to be a perspective that we don't see. And, you know, I'm a white woman. I did not feel as if it was I had the right or the voice to speak from a black person's perspective. There were incredible authors doing that already. But I thought, okay, what's another character? I was just curious, like, how do you do that character that everyone is assuming is one thing, but they have a completely different world going on? And in that case, you know, we have a homeless problem here in Port Townsend. I was going into Seattle. The homeless problem was just going crazy during the pandemic. And I started thinking, okay, what's it like? And what would it be like if you were a teenager who is trying very much to act like life is normal, but you're living in the gardening shed on your private school grounds, and you're trying to pull that off for the last couple months of your senior year? What would that be like? She also came from another book I found in William James, I'm telling you. and it was...
This is a hot tip for all you writers out there looking for inspiration.
It was, what was it called? The Illustrated Compendium of Amazing Animal Facts. And it's just this lovely, I thought I was buying it for my granddaughter. And they're just all these strange animal facts. And I just thought, who would be interested in this? And how would that, why would it matter? Why would, you know, what would be that person? And so Nola, my homeless gal, that's one of the things she does, is she reads these animal facts at night when she can't sleep.
Mm-hmm. Well, Nola shows up later in the story, and often with these kinds of books, with this kind of structure, you're waiting to see how things connect, and you surprise us. They don't all meet at the end and talk about the book by any stretch of the imagination, but there's these little hints, and it makes the reader really work, I have to say. There's a place, we're in a ghost town, and we're in an old hotel. And there's a sketch that floats out with, you know, wish you were here, Allie, or wish you were with me. And I'm going, Allie, who's Allie? And also Nola becomes, you know, enters the book near the end. And I'm thinking, oh, how did she end up here? Mm-hmm. You know, but there's no kind of grand coming together. And that's why it makes the reader think about things that may be happening, coincidences in their own lives where people and places are intersecting. Mm-hmm. So it was very fascinating. I really enjoyed that. You mention, and you've done this before, there's a character who works in publishing, and, you know, she's actually the agent, the owner of the company. And it's mentioned to read a book like Olive Kitteridge or by Elizabeth Strout or The Snow Child. And is that Eowyn Ivey's book, mm-hmm. The Snow Child? Mm-hmm. So I was really excited to see those. And mentioning those books so that people that are reading it might think, if they haven't read them, that they should pick these up because mm-hmm. they might be definitely worth something to read. And there's nice little gifts in this book from you, Erica, for the reader.
And I love doing that. I mean, I love creating Easter egg hunts. All my books have them. This one, it was more important. But I'm very aware that readers read at different speeds and for different reasons. And so I wanted to make sure that some of these connections would be pretty obvious. But there are other ones that are, I mean, you can go all the way down. There's some that are really, really subtle. and you're just going to have to dig to find them.
I'm going to have to read the book again, you're telling me. But gladly.
Only if you want to find them. And you know, I always want to make sure that it won't destroy your reading experience if you don't get it. It'll just add to it if you do. Mm-hmm. And that's where I like to go.
Actually, once I sensed one of these, that made me think and be watching more closely in the following chapters for mm-hmm. other ones. Mm-hmm. That's true. Besides talking about career, there are some really incredible love stories, some that work, some that don't work. Mm-hmm. And those seem to me very, very true. The dialogue is very true about how people would speak to each other when they were getting along or when they weren't getting along or when they were discovering each other or just hitting the wall. Mm-hmm. And then there's a really incredible chapter set in a Northern California ghost town where a widower goes very shortly after his wife dies. And he's one of these men who sells his house and tries to run away from grief. Mm-hmm. Tell me about that character and how you found him.
Well, and that's a good story of how circuitous the route to a story can be. So I read this article, it was during the pandemic, at the beginning of the mm-hmm. pandemic. There was this young man named Brent Underwood who had, I guess he bought this ghost town. And then he came to take over for the caretaker for just a little while. And this snowstorm happened, and he got stuck there for months. And he's still there. I mean, he's still doing, this has been years now, and the ghost town is turning into something. But I thought, what could you learn stuck in a ghost town, you know? And so this, you know, Brent Underwood's in his, I don't know, maybe he's in his early 30s. So for me, the story then morphs somehow, I don't know how, but my widower shows up. And it's a very different experience than what Brent Underwood had. He has a very different lesson to learn. I have been, you know, we all have to deal with grief. I'm 64. I get to deal with it more than I used to, maybe even. And I think it's an important thing to explore and to explore loss and what that means and how we heal.
Mm-hmm. He has some, you know, he's trying to run from grief, but he finds it like a troll hoarding his gold. That's one of your lines. And also that it's no matter how far you go, it's your traveling companion. It's always willing to be there with you. Mm-hmm. But you deal with this very, very sensitively and I think true to, you know, to people that are all struggling with getting over an incredible hole in their lives, a loss in their lives, and what to do about that. And this was my favorite way that the book Theo helped the widower. And can you describe that?
I can't because it's such a spoiler alert. But what I can tell you, I can tell you is that I didn't know for a really long time. I worked with that story for months and I almost gave up. And I just thought, no, it's going to be good. It's going to be important. Mm-hmm. Hang in there. Mm-hmm. And when I figured it out, you could have heard the whoop all the way down to Water Street. I mean, it just came in at the, yes, that's what it, because some of these people aren't readers. You know, William is not a fiction reader. He reads nonfiction. You know, there are other people in the book that really don't read at all. Or one person reads the first line of the book and pitches it across the room. You know, so not everybody has this. The book ends up being important, but often in ways that you don't anticipate. Mm-hmm. And I think we all know that. Sometimes it's the conversation you have with the person that hands you the book, which is almost more important than the book itself. And so it's that whole community and that whole interaction that happens around books as much as, or in addition to, the words that are on the page that makes reading the magical experience it is.
Right. And these characters and the places they are so strong. Like I said before, you're not really thinking all the time about the book and how it's going to fit into their lives. I mean, fleetingly, but... You know, I was totally immersed in the stories, mm-hmm. not so much anticipation of, you know, what the book was going to do or not do. In the final stage of life comes illness and facing death. And that's also addressed in this book. So, Erica, you don't shy away from the hard topics.
Nope.
But you definitely, this is a book that has... joy and hope and people that love one another and find their way to acceptance and joy in life. And so kudos to you. Congratulations.
Thank you.
This is an amazing book and I hope it finds every success. So are you starting to think about another book or are you just like this one? I'm interviewing Erica before the book has even been launched. And when you hear this, it will be all over the place. But what are you going to be doing next?
Well, the adage is you should always have the next book in your head mm-hmm. before you go on tour for the one before. Partly because it takes, you know, from the time that we sell a manuscript to the time that you see it, that can be 1 to 2 years. And so it's really important to have the next one under your belt, especially mm-hmm. in case that one, like the one that's coming out, God forbid, fails, right? You, mm-hmm. you need to be able to be on the horse already. So I am working on one, and I'm working on a research trip to England, and that's about all I'm going to tell you.
Oh,
it's not set in England.
Oh.
But, but you know, it's
funny. It's not historical fiction set in England.
No, I couldn't do that if you paid me. But, and, you know, no guarantees at books. I mean, when I came up with the idea for No Two Persons, I was in the middle of a completely different book. So
okay,
you never know where it's going to go.
We will anxiously await. Thank you again, Erica, for coming in and talking about your brand new book, No Two Persons. And please, everyone, join me next time to talk more about books and authors. I'm your host, Chris Wilson. You can listen to past shows and other programs from the podcast page on the website at kptz.org. And you could make a donation to the station there as well. Thank you to our engineer and editor, Taylor Clark, and all the volunteers and you supporters who make this wonderful radio station possible.
This is Joni Mitchell's River.
Well, you know, I'm so hard to handle. Sometimes I'm selfish and I'm sad. Now I gone and lost the best baby that I ever had. Oh, wish I had a river I could skate away on. He tried hard to help me. He put me at ease. Lord, he loved me so good.